46 to 55, which is the Song of Mary, the Magnificat. And entitled Woman's Song. And I've asked a couple of the musicians to come and chant or intone the text. The reason I chose this text, there are several reasons. One, it moves us from Mark to Luke, and Luke is a different planet than Mark. Two, it's a woman. And thanks be to God, through the hard blood, sweat, tears of the women's movement, more of the women in the closet are coming out of the closet, and the women in the shadows of the text we're beginning to notice how many clues there are in Bible study. We're beginning to notice how many clues there are to the loyalty and devotion of women in the text, in the tradition. The other reason I chose this text is because it's song. And I am frankly one of the people who feels a great kinship with the woman who said, they can never preach me to heaven, but they can sure sing me there. I think awe is a basic religious affection. I find it hard to imagine any kind of healthy faith, whether it be Christian or Buddhist or Hindu or humanist, without deep, deep repetition, gratefulness. And somehow song, where you have the sound of the text and sounds, keep that in front of us. There's also one other point I want to make. Notice, until they sing, you don't hear any music. The music is not the script. The music is the sound. Okay? The word is the spoken word. This is the printout. This is the printout. This is the script. This is the notes for the songs of the faithful and the witnesses of the faithful. And I am afraid that we have nurtured a whole choir of church folk who sit there and adore the music and don't sing. We have nurtured a whole generation that genuflect before the printed page or the icon and don't know that the printed page is the directions. 1, 2, 3. It's the recipe for allowing the music to happen, the sounds to happen. You know, pages don't taste good. If geese are paper, chopped up paper, I wouldn't go to dinner and eat grass. So, you know, and I want you to see the difference. Would you just rub the paper? Okay, just rub the paper. Just feel the cold paper and think paper. And then listen to the sound. Listen to the sound. Okay. So that's one of the reasons we're doing a song. All right. This is Jeff and Cindy. have to be about planning. This text has many resemblances and may in fact be a paraphrase of Hannah's song, which is in 1 Samuel, oh, I got it. It's 1 Samuel 2:1. So it's Mary's version of a woman's song. And in both cases, the women have experienced some providence in connection with a birth. In both cases, the births are untimely. In one case, because Hannah's too old, and in the other case, because Mary's too young. And so that the song, this incredibly hopeful song, is given to a woman to sing. Now this is so the roots of this song are way back. You know, way back in exile and behind exile and all that, in the griefs of the survival of this small, not very powerful group of people. And the other thing that's happened to this song, as someone pointed out first hour, is that this is in the Vesper service. So that this is the song of the whole church. This song, but in Luke, the song is given to a woman. Now, notice that one of the ways I think we can zip strip the text, and I think if we zip strip, if we get the grains of the roughness of the text in their pregnancy, they're not pregnant because they're there. If we see these kind of infant Christian gatherings in the first century, if we see these different kinds of congregations round about, all of them made up of Jews who were faithful to Jesus. So from, to all intents and appearances at the time, just another kind of Jews, okay? Just another Jewish group, all right? So in this period, they're much rougher, unsanded, and there's something about the rawness of the first century that I think that's why, in a sense, the scripture is privileged in the church, because there's something about the undigestedness of the first century that helps in its... Sometimes it nurtures the church when it's sick. Sometimes it just, the church stuffs itself with Bible and gets a stomach ache. And sometimes it can give the church an enema. You know, it can be a cathartic, and the roughness of the scripture can cause help feed a reformation. Okay? So the one of the jobs in Bible is to let the shadowy character of early Christianity hang out. And so, all right, this is a... All right. want you to see, what I want you to see is a narrative is a narrative is a narrative. Okay? Mark. Jesus is the young Vision Quest radical, hobnobs with John the Baptist, and so Jesus is introduced by introducing John the Baptist. So just look at the play. Just imagine a play, because these are kind of pageants. These are kind of congregational Jesus pageants. Imagine a play where the first character on stage is John the Baptist, and that's your clue to the story. This is a tough, this is a change, this is a new heavens and new earth, this is not fun, this is struggle. And Jesus dies, okay. But now notice in Luke, the first people on stage are women. They're two pregnant women. You get Elizabeth and you get Mary. Very different. Now there's something about the movement scars of John the Baptist that is an omen of Jesus' death. There's something about, but I don't know for sure. I need some women to tell me that they think so too. Otherwise, I don't know whether I'm right. But I think there's something about having women on stage that is an omen of the death, that is an omen of the birthing of life by dying. This whole business of the crucifixion as in a sense a labor that leads to life. But that includes death. Okay, birth. We need somehow to get to not the Mary up front, the Mary in the spotlight, just like the Jesus in the spotlight is Superman, and the Mary in the spotlight is somehow immaculate, perfect, not almost a surrogate mother for the Holy Spirit, somehow unreal, okay? Somehow larger than life. And I think we've done in the 19th and 20th century, we've done some of the same things to Jesus and Mary that so Jesus is Apollo and Mary is somehow, I don't know who Mary is, but she takes on the dimensions of goddess, and there's a Mary in the shadow that is more, that we just have some clues to, and I don't know what the shape, I don't know exactly the shape of it, but, and I have a hunch that in order to see the Jesus in the shadow, we have to see the Mary in the shadow. But there's something about the figure of Mary that tells us something about Jesus, but unless we zip-strip Mary and get her out of the, take the halo off of her, we're not going to be able to see why Luke put Mary in the picture in order to tell the Jesus story. So there's a lot of things going on here. Now, let me just, another thing. Mary in the up front, Mary in the spotlight is a very dutiful handmaid. Very sweet, does what she's told, takes all the male shit and doesn't open her mouth, okay? I cannot imagine that the Mary in the shadow was like that. Women in a society where the men had all the public power and the women had all the private work that held the community together were very tough people. They were very tough people. There was something very strong about this whole thing. I want to hint at something, and I don't know what to do with it, but I think we need to say it this way to get it down on the table and get it out of the closet, because there's a lot of pussyfooting it around the Virgin Mary. And Mary was pregnant before she was married. So Mary had gone through the experience of being an unwed mother. Okay? Now notice that in her own way, Mary is as rough edges as John the Baptist. You know, these are not tidy. Jesus is introduced associating with people who are not normally tidy. They're not tidy like the little house. They're not as tidy as we would expect women to be, marriageable women to be, or prophetic types to be, because once the prophets have made it into the holy books, we expect prophets to be very civilized, and they're very raw characters. They're very raw people. So Mary. That's one line to do, and the other line to do is this whole business of song. Just songs. How, when life is like this, how do we sing hope? How does this kind of person come out with this kind of view of God? The whole poem, the whole hymn, articulates a God in the shadow. A God in the shadow. You see, the God in the spotlight is the God who, in a sense, does what you need, does what you ask for, maintains, helps the powerful people who feel weak go on being powerful. Rather than reshaping their power. The God in the spotlight is on the side of traditional structures of power. But that isn't the song that Mary sings. She's not singing, she's not counting on the people in power to bring the covenant time. She's not counting on the people who got elected or were in charge of the army to bring the New Age. Now, what's that all about? What's that? Okay, that's enough jabbering. We'll take 2 to 3 minutes and let us all muse on the text, and then we'll start up again. So, would you take some time for yourself with the text, and then we'll start sharing what's important and curious and what engages you in the text? Is there in the text that is suggestive for you, or puzzling, or problematic? The Jews take the Job figure, take the Abraham figure, In Jewish tradition, you carried on an argument with God. You just didn't, you weren't, it wasn't the imperial model, it was the clan leader model, and so there was a lot of discussion with God. And I think we're in a time where some of us need to have that model for our relationship to God rather than the swallow it without thinking about it model. Because I think we're swallowing too many things that God doesn't want us to have because we're not chewing the scriptures. So anyhow, I'm just trying to give you permission to disagree with the text if that's what's given you. What's in the text for you?
Okay, there's a lot. One is there's an angel that speaks to Mary.
Well, I left that part out in my text. That's in the that was in the musician's part.
Oh, you want to do all at one? Okay.
But I want to know what you would say about that angel.
Well, that's really. Does that happen? Doesn't it? And if it does, how does it? What is that? Is that a part from deep inside that speaks to another part deep inside? Or is that something from outside that speaks to something inside? What is that? Is that God? Is it a, you know, is it not just something that's not God, but is somehow something that knows God's mind? What's that?
I think that there's something there that you and I are having a conversation about, and I think you're right on though. That question is right on. Well, take it all away. Was there a virgin birth or wasn't there? If you want to ask the historical question, did this happen in such a way that the people who were skeptics in the general human audience would have noticed it? Which is, I think, the question you're asking.
I think what I'm really doing is puzzling over, like, you know, about the kind of work that I do, and a lot of times people say that God is speaking to them in the work that we do together. What is that? Is that the same as Mary's angel, or is it different?
What do the rest of you think? Anybody else has answers? Questions?
I think it's an angel.
Do you think you hear angels by reading the newspaper, or do you think you hear angels when you go on your inward journey? Okay, did I get your question?
Maybe what I need to do is have a longer time to talk with you about this than just here, because no, it doesn't answer my question. I understand the train of thought that we're going on, it's the difference between, you know, a news report and a poem or whatever that, or an inward journey.
You're really asking, well, how do you know when you hear the voice of God?
Right.
Is there a Jewish tradition about angels? Like, apparently there is a Jewish tradition that virgin birth was attributed to those who gained immense stature within the Jewish community. Jesus isn't the only in Jewish history. Would an angel story be similar to that?
I personally don't know about that tradition of virgin birth in Jewish community. Most of the Hebrew Bible examples are providential births, women who are postmenopausal and have kids, or women who are infertile and have kids. And so they're not quite like this story. So one of my things I wrestle with is it sounds more like something, the reading of the story that became dominant in the church sounds more like a reading and a hearing of the story fashioned in Greece than in Palestine. And so I'm wrestling with how to hear this story as a first century Jew who would probably have heard the Isaiah text, which used to be read, "Behold, a virgin shall conceive," now is read, "Behold, a young woman shall conceive." You see, I think that recovery of the Jewish matrix that has taken place with Isaiah has not yet taken place. Conclusion that most of us have Bible chip cookies. You know, we have bits of Bible received with the sermon or spiritual moment around them, so that I'm a little bit loose here, and one of the reasons is because the deeper I get in there, I'm finding that the Bible is a little bit loose. It's not all tied together the way we put it together later. So anyhow, that's a hunch, that there's something on that.
But you say that it sounds more like a story put together in Greece than Palestine. Is it because of what you were saying earlier, the discussion element, back and forth with God?
Well, I'm jumping to the comic strips again. Superman. Incidentally, have you all noticed that Superman had to die? Very important cultural event. Very important cultural event. Same thing had to happen to Superman that's happening to the church's Christology. And it blows my mind away. It just blows my mind away to see the mirror of the church's struggle in the comic strip. But I'm sorry, I went off. The Mary in the spotlight. In the spotlight, every time something amazing and wonderful and inexplicable happens in the Bible, we hear it as supernatural. There's a power trip out there, and if I could just access that power trip, okay, then I will do powerful things, okay? So miracles mean access to power. Now, I have a really, really deep sense that whenever you see something that in the text is wonderful, let me just give you a picture. My Muslim friends always take off their shoes before they go into the Quran, into the mosque, because it's a holy place. Remember the burning bush? Take off your shoes. This is a holy place. This is mysterious. So whenever you see miracle, what you're seeing is the ancient world saying, I can't explain this. This is more, it's not, a miracle is not an explanation. A miracle is not an explanation of what happened. See, we can explain everything. We haven't explained it, but we explain it. We have an we have a verbal explanation for everything in creation, and if you want a virgin birth, you call it an anomaly. All right? A genetic mutation. Okay, fine. We have an explanation for everything. If you have a dream, it's a dream. You know, we have an explanation for everything. But I think when we say virgin birth, what we're saying is, I don't get it. Something awesome, something mysterious, something. There's a burning bush here. Something sacred is going on, and I don't understand it. So miracle means I don't understand it. It's a confession that I can't explain it, and so God somehow saying something to me that I ought to be picking that. So I got to pay attention to what can I hear in that. You see what I'm doing in this with virgin?
I think so.
Yeah. What you don't understand means you ought to listen 3 times longer and take off your shoes. When you don't understand something, take off your shoes. You're in a very what you don't understand is a clue to the fact that something awesome is going on. And you're going to have to work much harder and stay much longer to get any clues.
Okay, now this prompts me to ask, because it's along this line. Verse 3, Luke, it says, it seemed good to me, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, he sets this down that we've been reading in Luke 1. Now, the perfect understanding that Luke has, is that the understanding that you aren't going to understand the miracles? Or is his perfect understanding something else that we'll never understand? See, he assumed quite a bit. He's making a statement. He has perfect understanding of all these things from the very first, so he's writing it down for you.
Okay. One of the differences between the space where I'm coming from, I went to April's talk about how to study the Bible, and that's exactly where I used to be. I mean, and it's a very productive way to do things. Okay, but what has happened to me recently is that I'm much more worried about the baggage we're bringing. Okay, and I wanna say, hey, we got to do morally sensitive exegesis. We got to think twice about what we're bringing to the text. And until we see what we're bringing to the text, we'll never hear the text. You see what I mean? We'll pull the text into where we're at. Okay? You see what I'm worried about? Okay. Now, two things, my friend, from one academic to another. Number one, perfection. I would guess from some of the people I talk to that at least a quarter or at least a third or more of people that go for help to therapists have as presenting symptoms, perfectionism. The quest of perfection is a fungus that is corroding young plants. I've spent my life with 20-year-old human beings who are trying to get themselves to sound like a violin or a piano. How they think of the violin or piano is played, or trying to get themselves to sound like, come out like a mathematical formula. And they're human beings. They're plants. What's a perfect plant? You see what I'm saying? You didn't mean that, but what I'm saying is, all of the people around us, when they see the word perfect, I would just tear up the word perfect and say, I have full a full understanding, experienced understanding of these things. I don't think there's anything in this of perfect understanding, like we mean scientifically valid explanation forever and ever. Plus, the other fact is that I don't think understanding in the back then meant explanation. And I think that the scientific quest of explanation is the construction of socially useful models that enable us to interact with our environment and somehow steward our environment, and I don't think that's the same thing as understanding. I think understanding implies a knowledge of the inner meaning of the worthwhileness of what's happening, and not simply accuracy or...
Well, I didn't mean to ask about that.
Okay, now come back at me. So you see what I've done? I've taken your words, and I don't have a clue to what you meant, and I've used them to worry about cultural baggage.
We didn't use the word perfect before. The word perfect came out of here. So we were talking about understanding.
Okay.
And the question that came back here had to do with the spirit. And was the spirit the same? Is it the same in different situations that you feel? And what I was trying to decide is, was Luke, as he wrote this, trying to convey his feeling of this, which is the miracle in all that he's writing about, and saying to us, accept this as a miracle.
Luke didn't have a notion of miracle.
Okay, well that tells me something.
That's miracle is an invention of the 18th century. Okay. It's not a conception of the ancient
world.
You don't have miracle, or let me put it another way. There are two ways to put things. You can throw out the word or you can rehabilitate the word, one or the other. Now let me rehabilitate the word miracle. Supernatural you can't have until you have natural. A distinct conception of the natural that does not include something. Now the difference between the 18th century version of the natural and the 20th century version of the natural is the 20th century version of the natural is more organic and less determined by the physicists, and so we can include almost everything in our version of the natural, and the 18th century could not, and so you had supernatural. Okay, and miracle was co-opted into supernatural. But miracle means, the Greek word is simply that it's amazing. This is amazing. This is awesome.
Okay, what do you think he meant by the word understanding? Is it anywhere near the same or we're saying?
I think what Luke is doing with the word understanding, a perfect understanding, is saying, hey, please read this because you've already got Mark and I've got more to tell you than Mark could tell you.
Okay.
I think there's a bit of a pitch for the fact that this is a second gospel and he's changing Mark's story.
Okay.
Okay, does that make any sense?
Well, it does, yeah. But when I saw the word perfect, I just put a flag there really quick on it.
Yeah. But I'm worried about the word perfect. I am very worried about the word perfect and what it does to people.
It doesn't
seem
perfect.
Perfect, good.
Perfect.
Mine says certainty.
Well, maybe that was, I got the wrong Bible.
For a perfectionist to get this Bible is bad news this morning.
That's the red flag to me. Thanks to Sister.
See, the problem, what we're saying here is that our problems are over the English.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
They're not really over the Bible, they're over the English translations of the Bible. And English translations of the Bible tend to be here, and the English language tends to be here. So you're always dealing with the Bible. One of the functions of Bible study is to make a new translation of a text in language that is where we're at. I want to say something to Jerry to move our conversation along. If something very traumatic and mysterious happens to you, you're on holy ground, so you better listen. What is important in the text? Let's not get away from Mary or Mary's picture of God. Let's not lose the presence of women. in the story. I think it is starkly clear that women play no prominent place in either the gospel. Well, they play at the ending of Mark. I was amazed that the Marys were the only ones that hung on at the cross. But they show up at the death, but they don't play a big place in Matthew and in Luke. They're really very prominent, and in a peculiar way, they're very prominent in John. And I think this is very important to have on the table nowadays, for us nowadays. Why does Luke introduce Jesus by introducing his mother? What is there about Mary that is a prototype, that is a, what is there in Mary that is its own kind of, or put it, let me put it the other way around. Since my mother died, and I keep hearing, noticing my parents in me, and how many things that I have come to regard as gifts I got from my mother, how much of Jesus' strength is really Mary's strength? How much of what is really powerful in Jesus was conceived of and given to Mary, and Mary gave it. It was a gift given by God through Mary to Jesus.
One of the things that strikes me is Mary's willingness to believe immediately. And you've got the two stories next to each other. Zechariah, who doubted what the angel was saying, and as a result, he couldn't speak for the next 9 months. And Mary immediately says, yes, I believe that this can happen. I'm willing to do this.
The thing that struck me was also, not only that, but that Mary says, from now on, all generations will call me blessed. That goes beyond Mary because of what the Mighty One had, for the Mighty One has done great things for me.
And she wasn't silent, she had a son. I mean, Zechariah can't speak. And
Oh, is that after Mary speaks? Then Zechariah can sing. Mm-hmm. But Mary's song somehow. I make that word into a sentence.
Mike?
Yeah.
The word that came to my mind was obedience. Both Mary and Mary was very obedient and just took at face value what the angel said to her. And Jesus was also very obedient to God.
But to me, this seems just so unreal. I mean, when I see a pregnant teenager, I mean, that kid's scared to death. And here Mary's coming up with all this gorgeous, wonderful song. I mean, it's really unreal.
There's something that has happened to Mary to take an unwed mother and have her sing like this. So something has happened. Mary is in herself, like the glacier lily. Mary, I think that Mary is a presence that in herself signals hope. Just her existence signals hope. And when you get her being able to handle all of this and sing, this is a double blessing. It's double barreled hope. If you got somebody at the bottom of the pile who hangs in, wow.
If we're allowed, a point here, if we're allowed to, we can delete perfect from here, then it may be in fact...
Or just retranslate it, Walt. Just retranslate it.
Okay, then it's not the other story. That the understanding which Luke did have comes from that viewpoint, that it gives much more, I guess say, credit to Mary, and he goes back further and says it like it is. He had understanding of this, whereas maybe the others didn't have it. I mean, it's obviously important that what happened to Elizabeth and to Mary, and if the others start right out, just assume, well, this
Christ, and remember,
Christ gets center stage, or John the Baptist gets center stage.
And remember that since Luke was not a modern author, and in a sense what Luke is saying is reflective of the community of Luke, which had men and women in it. And there must have been more strong women in the Luke community. It was a different, it must have been a more egalitarian community than the Markan community. And so you get Luke is in a sense representing the community, and Mary is so notice what I'm doing. I'm lowering the boundaries between community and Mary and Jesus. There's more going on between these people than any modern individualist will ever understand, and than I will ever understand. You see, so there's more interdependence here, and interdependence between God, the community, and these people, than I think the only place I get a clue to that is in nature. I mean, I went up to did the Holden hike, and you know, I was just astonished at how many different kinds of plants live there. They each have their own little niche, and they don't kill each other, or the weather doesn't kill them. How can something so fragile as a glacier lily, or these little, you know those little tiny white ones with the little yellow dot? Mm-hmm. They're like a baby. They're like a soft skin. How do they survive the winter? Wow!
The thing that I wanted to say, kind of in response to what you were saying as well, to me, you know, I'm sure that Mary was very scared, and yet the sense that I had, this experience was so profound that no matter what else she went through or what else anybody else, what anybody else believed, that she knew in her heart what had happened to her and what was true. You know, I think of some of the spiritual experiences that I've had, and those aren't experiences that anybody can take away from me by their doubts or skepticism. You know, I know that they happened, and I know what they meant to me. And so I kind of have the sense that it's the same thing for Mary, that this was something very deep and profound, and she's able to sing in spite of the fact that she has to go through pregnancy when everybody around her, you know, believes that she is an unwed mother and had relationships with Joseph and whoever.
Do you think that there's something about the pregnancy that gives a woman hope? Do you think the pregnancy had anything? Do you think the pregnancy itself had anything to do? I heard a story this week about a woman, unwed mother, who, because she was having a baby, was more ready to get help and put her life together again, and it made me wonder whether this body process has in it something supportive of reframing our understanding of it. You see what I'm saying? I think again, I'm just like with the seed and the sower thing. I wonder if there's more interdependence between what's going on with the body and what's and the songs. I don't know. All right.
Yes, I'm wondering if someplace in the Bible it talks about Mary's birth, because artists maybe have taken the liberty to discuss Mary as being of an immaculate, she was born of an immaculate conception too, because she had been so born so free of sin. Is this, you know, I've heard this through the art history world, but I don't know about it in the Bible. I'm asking a Bible
The Bible scholar. The Bible scholar behind you says no, and she's right.
So we don't know that Mary herself was born of an Immaculate Conception.
Are we? Was anybody ever born of an Immaculate? Did you call the Holy Spirit Immaculate Conception? I would call the Holy Spirit an Immaculate Conception.
Well,
Anyhow, is
there any place in the Bible that talks about Mary's birth?
No.
Is what I'm asking.
So where is it? That's a Catholic tradition. And where does it come
from? No, I'm trying to zip strips, you see. I don't want to bring to this story, so much all of that somehow. I want to, and let me speak once more to your art. You notice I've been using Madonnas and this sort of thing. Part of the purpose of Bible study is to open the text, not close the text. And I think we have been living in a time where church communities have closed the text. In other words, eliminated the ambiguities in the text. They've made it into mathematics instead of art. And the text is poetry and art in a profound sense, and is a sense like the sower and the seed just scatters its seed all over the place. And so a seed of the Bible can touch the artist's imagination, and the artist can make up a story that isn't in the text, but that says something that is true about the seed that was in the text. Mm-hmm. And so one of my, I consider part of my vocation to recover, to help open up the text. Not close the text, but I don't think we ought to close the text. At least not in this setting and not yet. So,
yeah.
Huh?
Not yet.
Not
you
yet.
Mean sometime it'll be closed?
I think Larry helps to close the text. I think Mark helps to close the text. I think Ingrid helps to close the text. I think Jerry and Gail help to close the text, move the text along. But I think that the Bible, if the Bible is going to remain the seed and the salt and a little bit of illumination spread extravagantly without regard to effect, we can learn another way of sowing the seed as well. There are times to close the text, and if you need to know how to close a text, I can work with you on that. But not here. Okay, we got to quit. I'm particularly hopeful that some of you who are women will continue to reflect on Mary and tell me more about what Mary means, because I think she's still in the shadow, and there's a shadow that Mary will cast that's not yet full for the church.